them, now they'll barely speak to you. What's driving the rise in parent-child estrangements? It's being called a silent epidemic. We're going to talk about that this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson, in for the vacationing Kathleen Dunn for the next couple of weeks. My guest is Dr. Josh Coleman, co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families and a psychologist with a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. Dr. Coleman, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, the term silent epidemic is being thrown around to describe what's happening between parents and their adult children these days. There seems to be a lot more estrangement happening than we've seen before. Is that true, or are we just hearing more about it?
Well, I suspect that both are true. I think that I actually coined the term silent epidemic for this because what happens is whenever I do national media on this topic, I get deluged with phone calls and emails from people all around the country saying, I thought I was the only one. And so many people suffer in silence from parental estrangement because they feel so ashamed to talk about it. Now, a certain percentage of adult children also feel ashamed to admit that they're estranged from their parents. So in general, it's something that hasn't been talked about very much, and we don't have a lot of statistics about it, but from the way I think about it, it's probably something that's much more a phenomenon of something that's happened more in a half century than before then.
Well, maybe our expectations are a little different these days than they were, say, I don't know, even 100 years ago. If someone, you know, someone left Europe to come to America to find work, you wave at the dock and you might never see him again. I mean, there wasn't necessarily this expectation that there is now.
That's exactly right. And that back then, really, up until even more recently than that, the expectation when you raise children was that you raise them to kind of go off and onto their own. And the idea that you would have a long-term, close, intimate friendship with them over the life course is a relatively recent phenomenon. And I think that has to do with the way that parenting's changed in the past half century. Starting in the 60s, parents became, particularly middle and upper class parents, began to be much more concerned about not hurting their children with their authority. The home became much more democratized. We worried much more about what children thought and felt. Children moved from being seen and not heard to being the center of family life. It used to be that it was the child's job during the parents' love and respect. These days, it's the parents' job during the child's love and respect. So there's been this enormous cultural shift towards emphasizing children's feelings and well-being, and many of that's been positive. You know, there's a recent Pew study that showed that a high percentage of parents who have adult children today say that they feel closer than they think that their parents felt to them. But the downside is that the way that these changes in terms of what we emphasize and other kinds of changes that we could sort of broadly put under the topic of the rise of individualism has made family life much more fragile.
How so?
Well, because there's much more emphasis on what makes the individual happy, and that's been probably one of the biggest changes in parenting. We're much more concerned about, is my child happy? Do they have good self-esteem? Are we endowing them with enough social and financial capital to navigate through what can sometimes seem like an ever-narrowing passage towards adulthood? And then once they get into adulthood, how will they fare? Will they get into the right colleges? Will they have sufficient money to have a life? And so all of this concern about what makes the child happy, there's much more of an emphasis on that and much less of an emphasis on, say, parental respect, you know, respecting the parents or taking care of the parents. So this is kind of a class difference. If you look at the research on working class versus middle and upper class parents, working class adult children in general express far more appreciation and gratitude for what their parents have done for them than do middle and upper class children. So in some ways, this imbuing our children with a great degree of confidence and assertiveness and individuality and independence, in general, it's a positive thing. But it can also come back to bite the parent.
Well, it seems like, and I'm not a psychologist, and I'm certainly not going to start playing one on the radio. but it seems to me that there, if we put this much focus on the happiness and the development of the child, that's an awful lot of pressure. I mean, because then don't they feel the pressure of, well, I have to be happy because mom and dad expect me to, and they're paying attention?
Yeah, well, I think it bites everybody in the butt, basically. I think it's in some ways problematic for everyone. This big shift in our culture towards a concern about happiness. It's problematic both for parents and children that there's so much emphasis on happiness. And that's also a relatively recent phenomenon. And in some ways, that's part of the problem that we psychotherapists have created in our emphasis on A, raising happy children, and B, on blaming parents when those children aren't happy. So the culture at large blames parents when children, when they grow up, aren't happy. And so it's reasonable that when adult children get into therapy and start reviewing family life and what their parents did or didn't do, that they're going to go back and talk to their parents about all the mistakes that they made. And when it goes well, the parent can just be empathic and listen and take responsibility. But of course, often it doesn't. Often the parents feel like, hey, you had a gold-plated childhood compared to what I had. You want to know what a hard childhood was like? I had a hard childhood. Your childhood was a walk in the park. And that,
yeah, we had to walk. We had to walk to school 10 miles through the snow, uphill both ways in our bare feet. Yeah, I remember. I remember getting that speech too. But maybe the emphasis isn't always necessarily on happiness as much as it is on being a success.
Right.
We want the best for our children. We want them to be at the top of their class. We want them to get into the good school. And good heavens, we have people competing to get their children into preschool before they're even born.
Yeah, there's an enormous amount of pressure that's put on the family that is bad for parents and bad for children. It's bad for parents because they're holding themselves up to this ridiculously, absurdly high expectation about their role in their children's happiness. I mean, parents are certainly very important, but they're not as important as they're made to feel. And there's this enormous amount of pressure that's put on the child to sort of prove their value and worth, if for nothing else than to reassure the parent. And one of the ways that all of this increase in parental investment in children can backfire is that a lot of adult children who later estrange themselves actually come from homes where the parents actually did do a pretty good job, were loving, were dedicated. It's just that the child felt so enmeshed with the parents that they don't know any other way to feel separate from the parents' influence than to just kind of go, look, I need to be completely away from you. And sometimes that's said, you know, more politely, and sometimes it's not. But if we look at parenting prior to the 1960s, parents probably made more the mistake of being maybe too detached. But parents since then, particularly in the last few decades, last three decades, I would say, are making much more the mistake of being too enmeshed with their children. And that has negative consequences as well.
Well, and their identity and their own self-concept is all wrapped up in how their children do. And so it's sort of a way to live vicariously, I guess. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, no, not only vicariously, but we're all judging ourselves based on what we imagine to be the ideal. And unfortunately, that ideal is built upon a faulty premise that parents have all of this power to make their children happy. I mean, we have some power, but we don't have the kind of power that we've been kind of made to feel. And it's a problem not only for parents, but it's a problem later for the child when they grow up and feel like, well, why didn't you do X or Y or C? Because I have these problems. It's your fault. Well, yes, sometimes it is the parents' fault, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's an issue of where the kid grew up, what their genetics are like, who they marry, their own mistakes, who else they surround themselves with in terms of influence. There's so many factors that shape who we are in terms of who we become as an adult that are completely separate from who our parents were or are.
And don't we also run the risk of generating a sense of entitlement? That's a word that gets tossed around perhaps way too frequently. But some of the stories that I read of parents who were going through a situation where their adult children were estranged had to do with some really seemingly unrealistic expectations that children had for what their parents could provide. And in my own case, I've never been estranged from my children, but I do remember a point at which one of my children became upset with me because I did not know the answer to a question. And it was, but you always know the answer. I don't have the answer to this question. You'll have to look it up. And it was, you know, that we really flipped. I mean, I was kind of dumbfounded for a moment. Later on, we laughed about it. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
But we have stories of some children whose expectations for what their parents are supposed to do for them in their adult life maybe wasn't realistic. Are we creating that sense of entitlement
Absolutely.
By the way we parent?
Well, yeah, and this is, again, much more of a middle and upper class phenomenon of parenting than working class parents. But, yeah, I mean, what happens when you raise children with and kind of give them everything that they need? You kind of get them to the best schools or at least reasonably good schools. You sort of send them to therapy. You're in therapy yourself. You give them tutors. When you sort of provide them with a very rich style of life, I mean, for example, I mean, I didn't even see Europe till I was 40. All three of my children saw Europe probably before they were teenagers. So, you know, there's this kind of expectation that lifestyle is going to continue, and it's our fault. I don't fault any adult children, you know, from this. And even if you didn't raise your children with that value, it's the air that they're breathing. So the air is that the parents should do a lot for them. And if they're not, then they're being derelict, and then they can later come back to the parent and say, well, you should have done all that for me. The fact that you didn't means you're a bad parent, so I don't even owe you anything.
Mm-hmm. 800-486-8655. We're talking about adult-child rifts, estrangement. We're seeing a lot more of it. It's being called a silent epidemic by my guest. Maybe you've got a story to talk about. Maybe you're a child who's estranged from your parent. Maybe you're a parent whose adult children have said they don't want anything to do with you. Tell your story. Let us know how this has worked for you. And maybe you're in a situation where there was a rift in the relationship, but you were able to get it repaired. We'd like to hear what you had to go through in order to accomplish that. 800-486-8655 is the number to call. 800-486-8655. You can also reach the Kathleen Dunn Show online via email at talk@WPR.org, or you can use social media. Go to Facebook or Twitter, look for the Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave your comment or question there. We're talking with Josh Coleman, who is co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families and is a psychologist with a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, talking about these relationships, why they go bad. And we've been discussing how parenting factors into that. We're going to take a short break in just a moment. And I think when we come back, Dr. Coleman, I'd like to maybe shift the discussion a little bit to talk about how certain family dynamics tend to produce these kinds of rifts. For example, divorce. And what happens there when children end up having to choose one parent or the other, and how that can cause some long-lasting impacts in terms of the relationship between individual parents and their children. 800-486-8655. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up tomorrow in our 2 o'clock hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show, the 1960s were, it was a pivotal decade for America. The assassination of John F. Kennedy, eruption in civil rights protests, the war in Vietnam. Tomorrow at 2, author James Patterson joins me. His latest book, The Eve of Destruction, zeroes in on a single year, 1965, and explains why it was one that transformed the nation. That's tomorrow at 2 on the Kathleen Dunn Show. This hour, we're talking about estrangement between parents and their adult children. It's being called a silent epidemic. We're discussing how it happens, why it happens, what we can do about it with Dr. Josh Coleman. He is co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families and is a psychologist with a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. I should have mentioned this earlier. He's the author of numerous articles and chapters, who's written 4 books, including When Parents Hurt, Compassionate Strategies When You and Your Grown Child Don't Get Along. 800-486-8655, the number to call to join the program. We have some callers. We'll get to those in just a moment. But Dr. Coleman, before the break, I mentioned that one of the themes that seems to be that seems to kind of filter through a lot of the articles about estrangement between the parents and their adult children is divorce, the family mm-hmm. dynamic. You get, you know, some divorces are really messy, others are more amicable, but the children kind of get caught in the middle in any case. Talk about how that plays into to this estrangement issue.
Yeah, it turns out to be very important. I would say some 75% of the families that I end up working with as a divorce in the past, and that may also, that includes divorce when the children are grown. And I think there's a number of ways that divorce can increase the risk of estrangement. It can, in the mind of the child, it can look like there's sort of a winner and a loser, so that the child may feel at any age like they should ally more with one parent over the other. It can cause one parent may choose to very consciously sabotage the relationship with the other child, what we call parental alienation, where the parent very willfully seeks to destroy the relationship with the other parent, either by limiting access when they're young or by lying or distorting or revealing unflattering things towards the child. When parents remarry or start dating or coupling, it may bring people into the child's life that they either don't like, or that the new partner doesn't like the child, or there's new siblings or half-siblings to kind of compete with for resources. And finally, perhaps most subtly but most importantly, in a highly individualistic culture like ours, I think it causes children to look at their parents more as individuals with their own kind of relative assets and liabilities, and less like a family unit of which they're a part. So for all four of those reasons, I think the divorce can be a very powerful trigger of parental estrangement.
Well, even when there isn't divorce, I mean, parents children are competing with their siblings for the attention of one parent or the other, or mm-hmm. even if there's, in the case of, say, there's an only child involved, the only child may be competing with mom for dad's attention or with dad for mom's attention. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of competition going on within families, regardless of how many children are involved. Can that play a part in this as well?
It can, particularly if a child feels scapegoated in some way, that might increase the risk of a later estrangement. If they felt very alone in the family, they may feel like, well, you know, nobody was there for me growing up. Why do I need to have an investment in this relationship as we get older? I think a bigger risk for an only child in an intact family is actually in some ways getting too much of the parent. This is a phenomenon that I also see with single mothers, where in some ways, you know, a dedicated single mother may later be rejected by the adult child because in some ways that child didn't have enough immunity to the parent's feelings, positive or negative, because there wasn't another parent there to depend on or to kind of distribute just the emotions in the family. So they may later have to reject the mother as a way to just feel more separate from her. This could be true of a very dedicated, loving mother. So there's so many different ways that family dynamics can cause these things. I mean, a very common thing that I see these days, I'm actually doing a webinar on this tomorrow night because I do webinars for estranged parents, is when the adult child marries somebody and that new husband or wife doesn't like the parents, or the parents don't like the husband or wife, and they say something, you know, very off-putting. And then, you know, then there's a big divide. The adult child typically allies with their spouse, and often many estrangements come from that. So there's a number of different ways that these kind of dynamics can get triggered.
Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of callers, as we anticipated. Let's go to the phones right now. Chris is with us from Milwaukee. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. I have a 28-year-old son. We just started talking after about a year of almost zero communication whatsoever. Last summer, we had brought him back home. He's a millennial. And his idea of parenting was that we should have provided more for him. I have a new wife. He's a product of divorce. And our idea was that when you turn 18, you either go to school or you go out on your own. And that's what we tried to impart on him. He tried to stay home as much as he could. He doesn't work. He rarely pays rent when he's living out on his own. And last year we had to bring him in, because he had no place to live. He had been kicked out. And we set up a plan that he would stay with us for the summer. We would make him work. He had to save the money. And then he would use that to go out on his own. And at the end of the time, his thought was, well, you kicked me out. Why are you doing this to me? And that set up a year-long not talking. It's been horribly stressful. We don't know how to handle it, how to go about it. And it's kind of been his whole adult life like this, blaming us for not being there, for not taking care of him.
Yeah. Mm. Chris, thanks for the call. Doctor?
Yeah, no, I think Chris raises a very common conflict for parents who, you know, have often been very dedicated and have been conscientious, and the kid still isn't launching for some reason and then is later blaming the parent. So, you know, each one of these cases is different and has to be sort of thought about differently. So in general, you know, when I'm working with a family, I would be thinking, well, does Chris's son have chronic depression? Does he have chronic anxiety? Does he have a learning disability? What's interfering with his capacity to launch? And, you know, he may actually not have enough psychological resources and emotional resources to develop an adult life. And in some ways, he actually may need more from the parent. So that's certainly possible. You know, parents always have to think about, well, am I enabling the child by providing support, or do they actually need much more support? Unfortunately, some kids actually do need much more support, and he may be one of those. So the second part that's important here, though, is that his kind of blaming you is also kind of a common thing for kids who can't launch. It's partly a way that they defend against their own shame and low self-esteem and inadequacy. So I would probably try to avoid getting into a right or wrong about that and just see if you can – maybe you need a family therapist to help you navigate that conversation about, well, tell us what you need. From us, from our perspective, that looks like that's going to actually not really help you to launch. But if you can provide a good reason that'll help you to launch, you know, if you have the resources – you know, we're happy to provide them. Otherwise, we don't want to actually do something that's going to prevent you from that.
Chris, thanks so much for the call, and good luck as you move forward with this. Let's go to McHenry, Illinois, where Lydia is on the line. Lydia, thanks for joining us today.
Hi. I was wondering, as a stepmom to an 8-year-old girl who I love so much, and there's very little animosity between any of her four parents, but you never know what's going on at the other end, her biological mother and her stepdad. I don't know what kind of ways they talk about us at home, and I'm hearing a lot about why kids become estranged later on. I'm wondering, are there any simple things other than just being loving and respectful as you can be in this situation to prevent it?
Well, it sounds like your instincts are good, and it's great news that that all four parents have some degree of compatibility. It's very problematic and toxic to children when parents complain to their children about the other parent or the step-parent. You know, parents often can say, well, they need to know this. Well, it's like, no, they don't need to know it. You're actually harming your child when you blame the other parent, when you criticize the other parent. Your child has a right to love that parent, even if you hate them. So it sounds like your instincts about that are right. The main thing, you know, in some ways, it isn't like there's any one particular thing that a parent can do to prevent parental estrangement, because sometimes really good parents later get estranged because the child, you know, as I was saying earlier, they may marry somebody who's troubled, and that person may be so threatened by you that they need to in the relationship, or your kid may have their own psychological needs to separate from you, and that's the only way that they know how to do it. For some adult children, cutting off contact with their parents is sort of a way to just really feel on their own, like they're completely flying on their, you know, their own power. But if we're sort of looking at the things that minimize the risk, certainly having a close, open, confiding relationship where the child can tell you what their complaints are and you can be interested and sensitive to those without being ruled by them, where you maintain a sense of your own power and integrity and authority, at the same time being sensitive and interested in the child. Being authoritative as opposed to authoritarian is typically the best way to go.
Lydia, thanks so much for that call. We've got some Facebook comments that I'd like to get to as well. John writes on Facebook, you might want to discuss what lies at the heart of family estrangement, narcissism. It starts with parents, usually fathers, but is passed down to children who compete for the positive attention that might come from a narcissist. This can get very pathological and harmful, even tragic, as it is passed on down through the generations.
Certainly, I think the narcissism is a popular topic in our culture. I think it kind of is a version of what you were describing earlier, John, about the kind of entitlement. I don't think there's any evidence per se that it's passed down from fathers. I actually hear many more estranged adult children talking about their narcissistic mothers, and I assume a certain percentage of them genuinely have narcissistic mothers. And I think the other percentage don't, but it's a way for the adult child to not feel like they have to be so available to the parent. This goes also to something you were saying earlier, John, that we have these raised expectations for our children. So some children don't know any way not to feel guilty about not wanting to be as close to their parents, being more distant, being more separate, having their own lives, than to kind of blame the parent and make the parent sound like they're a narcissist or they're overly needy or they're borderline personality disorder. And often that's not the case.
It reminds me of the old joke. My therapist told me I was a narcissist, and I said, why should I care what you think?
I'm going to use that one. That's good.
Yeah, I always that always gets a laugh. Sarah writes us on Facebook, my mother and I had a rough relationship. I left the state at a very early age. It has taken years, therapy, and work on both ends. In the end, the mistakes that we both make are our own. That seems like a really enlightened viewpoint to me.
It is a very enlightened viewpoint, but this is probably a good place to say that I actually think parents have to take the lead on these issues, that as much as we have raised our children to be equals to us, we're actually never going to be exactly equal to them. If anybody's going to take the high road, it's your job as a parent to take the high road. Therefore, if your kid comes to you and says, well, you know, I want to talk about all the mistakes you made as a parent, you're far better off going, all right, I'll have that conversation with you. Tell me what it was. If you're a parent and think you didn't make mistakes, you are high. We all make mistakes as parents. There's no way you can be a parent and not make really big mistakes. So you're far better off coming from the position that your child is raising this as a way to be close to you and improve the relationship with you than to attack you. Now, it's the easiest advice to give, and it's the hardest advice to take, but it's the most crucial piece of advice I can give you. If your kid comes to you with a complaint, you're much better off saying, tell me about that, taking responsibility, trying to empathize with it, finding the kernel of truth, even if you don't particularly agree with it, try to assume that they're telling you something important about them. They're giving you an opportunity to be closer. So I think, Sarah, I'm always happy when I hear this kind of a perspective that both people took responsibility and came to the middle. But often I think parents have to kind of make the first take leadership in terms of being willing to talk about, you know, that it was their responsibility to kind of be there for the kid, et cetera, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, in spite of all the books written about parenting, babies don't come with owner's manuals. and let's face it, most parents are winging it. I mean, they're making it up as they go along, and they get tons of unsolicited advice from their own parents, from aunts and uncles, from friends, from people who they see on television and hear on the radio and whatnot. But the truth is that we're all pretty much just ad-libbing this thing as we go along. And you put it, I mean, there's no perfect parent, and we're all going to make mistakes. But the expectation is that we won't, and so that seems to be a real area of problem.
I think it's a huge area of problem. I think it's the problem with modern psychotherapy is that, you know, people come into therapy, and I'm a psychologist, and I also do this myself. But part of what we do in therapy is look at the role of the parents. The problem is that there's a cost to blaming parents. And I just co-authored an article with this with Phil and Carolyn Cowan at the University of California, Berkeley, called The Cost of Blaming Parents. And that is that, you know, when we get mad at parents for how they behaved in the past, sure, there's a place for that, and often we need to do it for a while. But if you sort of stay there, if you just stay chronically mad at your parent, you're actually not really being very thorough in your thoughts about kind of what's humanly possible. Typically, people who are bad parents have bad parenting themselves. So you're sort of expecting your parent to do or know something that they just might not have had access to at the time that they were raising you, or if their marriage was bad, or they didn't have the financial resources, or their own childhood was so damaging that they didn't know how to do it. So I would like the culture to shift towards a more compassionate view, not only towards children, which we have pretty much in hand, but also a compassionate view towards parents, and away from a kind of a blaming-centric aspect of parenting.
Let's take another call. Costa is with us in Janesville. Costa, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. First of all, let me say that I'm so comfortable in this conversation. Everything that you guys are saying is definitely something I've experienced in some way, and I know it shouldn't be that awkward or that different, but it feels so comfortable listening to you guys describe, in effect, my life. My parents were immigrants. We were separated due to immigration. They chose to focus on working, and they gave us to a family member to raise until we were about 8 or 9 years old, me and 5 siblings. And then they reintroduced themselves into our lives at that point. And that was really a hard adjustment to go from no parent to having a parent that requires you to clean your room and do all the things that parents require. There was a lot of other issues as well. But as we grew up, estrangement, it wasn't only an issue between us and our parents, but also with each other. All my siblings have taken each, we have chosen a continent, and there's only one for my family in each continent right now. One is in North America, one in South America, one in Australia, and one in Europe. And it seems like the whole family is estranged because we haven't learned how to be a family. One more thing, the doctor was talking earlier about how some of these things develop into some kind of disorder, whether it's BPD or some other issues. My concern is those things bake into the personality, into the character of the child, and it's kind of hard when you're an adult to separate that, to recognize, like you said, what part is blaming the parent and what part is your own responsibility. It's really hard to do because it bakes into who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm. Costa, thanks for the call. Doctor?
Well, I thought that was poetically put, that it kind of bakes into who you are. I think that's well said. And I think, you know, another layer of analysis is the attachment from the parent to the adult child. And I think from what you were describing, Costa, in your situation, there was a kind of a rupture in the attachment with your parents, if I understood correctly, where they were out of your life for a while and then came back in. And sometimes, as you observed, that's not very easy for the child to adjust to. And in some ways, that can disrupt the long-term attachment to the parent. In the same way that divorce sometimes can do that. If a parent doesn't have a lot of time with the child, that child may feel less invested later in life. On the other hand, if the child has in some ways too much of the parent, that can also affect the relationship. But I think the way you put it about the way that these kind of elements in the environment that the child is being raised is kind of baked into the child's psyche is a very poetic, poignant way to phrase that.
Thank you so much, Costa, for your comments. We have more callers on the line. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll have more with Dr. Coleman and with you. If you want to join us at 800-486-8655, if you call right now, you have a good shot at getting on the air before the top of the hour, 800-486-8655. We're talking about family estrangements. A lot of things go into this. So obviously, the family dynamic is a very complex one. Lots of stuff going on there and a lot of opportunities for things to go very badly wrong. And we're talking about what that happens. What I would like to try to do for the rest of this hour, and we'll take calls and they can talk about whatever they want to talk about. But Dr. Coleman, I'd like, when we come back, I'd like to talk about some things that we can do, both maybe to prevent these breaches from happening in the first place. And we've talked a little bit about some of those things, but also what to do when things go bad. How do we? How can we work? What are some things that we should do and some things that we should not do if we have a situation where maybe we're a child who's been estranged from their parents or parents who have adult children with whom they're estranged? And let's talk about some solutions as well. 800-486-8655, talk at WPR.org. Find the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and Twitter as well, and join our conversation. Kathleen is on vacation this week and next. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about family estrangement. Parents are finding themselves suddenly estranged from their adult children. And we're talking about why that happens and what can be done about it. My guest is Dr. Josh Coleman, co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families, a psychologist with a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's the author of a lot of articles and chapters. He's written four books, including When Parents Hurt, Compassionate Strategies When You and Your Grown Child Don't Get Along. He's also a frequent guest on various television programs and on National Public Radio and the BBC. We're very happy to have him with us. Doctor, we have full phone lines. I'd like to get to some of these calls, but let's think about some of the things that we can do, some strategies that we can do to maybe correct some of these problems. Let's go to Christina in Madison next. Christina, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi. My question, it relates to estrangement and doing it, kind of, I guess, in a healthy way. I'm a daughter in my 30s, and I think I'm in the early stages of estrangement from my dad, and that's following my mother's death a couple of months ago. And so while she was sick for several years, it became very apparent that that their relationship was really dysfunctional, and they actually divorced after she was diagnosed with cancer. And in the years leading up to her death, while they were divorced, my dad was so negative to me about my mother, and I stuck it out with him, and I tried to, you know, balance my relationship with my mom and my dad after their divorce. And then after she died, he right off the bat just laid into me again about bad things about my mom. And so I'm stuck at this point where I'm ready to be done with this relationship, because I don't think it's healthy for my children now to see someone like that. And I'm just wondering how to do it right and how to be respectful of the relationship that we had and how he was an important part of my life. But I don't think he's healthy. I don't think it's good to stay in contact with him.
Christina, thanks so much for your question. Doctor?
Christina, what did you say after your mom died? He laid into you about what?
Oh, he just, about all sorts of bad things that my mom did and was.
Wow. I see. I'm so sorry. Well, first of all, I'm so sorry for you losing your mom at such a young age. That's got to be awful. And to have this other stuff going on with your dad, that's a lot to be put on your shoulders. I'm not surprised that you're kind of wondering whether or not your dad is somebody that you want to stay close to. So what about having a conversation with him, which you may have already had, where you kind of warn him about it, that where you say, first of all, Dad, unless I ask you, Dad, I don't want to hear anything ever bad about my mother from you. I mean, even if you, Christina, had your own complaints, that may be totally separate from your wanting to hear, you know, your father complain about her. It's still going to be very powerful to you. So you could say, I don't ever want to hear you say anything bad about Mom unless I ask you for a certain kind of feedback or report. I think it's very selfish of you to take that position with me, particularly very shortly after she died, when I'm in the midst of my grief and mourning. Assuming he was a good dad to you in some ways, or tried hard or something, you could say, you know, I know you love me, and there are ways that you've been, you know, with me as a dad that I am grateful for, so I'm open to working on our relationship, but I actually need you to be very different if I'm going to remain in contact with you. There's a lot of things that I need you to do different. And I would just say what that list is. I mean, you can say, we might need to go to family therapy about this if your dad's really defensive, and I suspect that he is, given what you've told me. But I think in general, we sort of never know, you know, with our parents, you know, same with marriage, if you're thinking about divorce, you sort of never really know unless somebody's really posed with the question of actually not having that relationship, how they're going to respond to it. So I would give them a chance, you know, in kind of ideal circumstances. And if he refuses, says, well, Dad, I actually don't know that I want to have a relationship with you if these are the terms. If every time I get together with you, you say these really destructive things to me, it doesn't particularly feel like a kind of relationship that I really want to maintain. How about something like that?
Well, and, you know, that's where we're at, is that this has been going on for several years.
Sure.
While she was still living. And I would say, look, we can have a conversation about anything besides my mom. I have a relationship with you. Let's move forward with this. And he breached that boundary over and over and over again. And I feel like I've given him, you know, 100 second chances. And maybe now the difference is that my mom has died and my tolerance is lower. I think I'm at that point where I said to him, the last communication was, you hurt my feelings. This is why. And then he apologized, but there hasn't been any follow-up communication, and that's why I feel like we're estranged. And how do we move forward? Do we at all, or is this just the way it's going to be?
Christine, thanks so much for your call. I really appreciate that, and wish you the best going forward. And again, sorry for your loss of your mother. That's always a horrible thing to deal with. Doctor, we're going to run out of time here rather quickly, and time seems to go faster in the last 10 minutes of any talk show broadcast. That's an axiom of the business. Can you give us three or four tips or things that we should do or not do if we find ourselves in a situation as adults where we're estranged from our parents, or we're the kids in this case, and we're estranged? The estrangement, we're looking at it from our point of view. Give us a couple of tips we can use.
Sure. Well, so, you know, I probably work with as many adult children who are estranged from their parents as I do parents. And in general, you sort of want to, I think, give your parent a chance. Kind of coach them through it. It's very painful for parents to hear all the ways that they screwed up. So I think you want to try to balance that as much as you can with whatever you like, loved, admired, or appreciated about your parent, if you're actually estranged from them or you're contemplating it. Secondly, let them know very specifically what it is that they do that bothers you or bothered you when you were growing up. See, you might have to coach them about how the best way for them to respond. D, have compassion for their inability to do it in a way. I mean, most parents of an older generation, you know, weren't really raised to communicate in the way that you probably were raised to communicate. So they may not do it in a very good way. It may sound more defensive than feels good to you, but try to give them the benefit of the doubt. Be open to family therapy. If you're the parent, the buck stops with you. I'm sorry. You have to take responsibility. Even if it hurts. Now, that doesn't mean you have to accept wrongful accusations. If you were told that you were a child molester and you really weren't, if you were, you absolutely have to take major responsibility and for the rest of your life. Or if you're accused of being an abuser emotionally or physically, if you're accused of being physically abusive and you weren't, then I'm not suggesting that you do. But pretty much most complaints that adult children have about their parents, there may be at least a kernel of truth to them, even if they're presented in a way that makes it very hard to swallow. You're far better off trying to find that kernel of truth, taking responsibility, showing empathy, because it's, you know, if your child brings these issues to you, most of the time they're bringing them because they actually want a closer relationship. It isn't really to beat up on you and shame you, even though it seems like it. And then the next thing is to try to not give up too soon, even if you're feeling rejected. Now, that said, some adult children, you know, really don't want their parents to contact them for a while. So if you find that every time you do, your kid gets more and more outraged, they're calling the police on you, they're talking about restraining orders, this is something I see a lot, you're far better off letting go, letting things cool down. It means it's way too inflamed. Give it some time to cool down, and see if some kind of a new dynamic can evolve from that. But those are some of the most important parts.
Okay, that's a lot to chew on here. One of the things that you suggest that I think is probably often overlooked by parents, because we don't want to stop being parents. We always want to be the parent, and that is don't give unsolicited advice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's really hard.
Because you really do
want to always be the parent, but at some point you have to stop.
Well, not only don't get unsolicited advice, but also kind of remember that in this much more close, intimate environment that we've created, your opinions still do pack a big punch. So even if you think you're being mildly critical of your kid or of who they're married or dating, or what their career choices are, or their sexuality, whatever it is, it actually probably packs a far bigger wallop than you think that it is. So if your kid looks like they're having an allergic reaction to your advice or your opinions, then you're far better off kind of backing off than just continuing to push down that route.
And again, before we run out of time, you can continue the discussion, dear listeners, on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And while you're there, be sure to like us And you'll get updates on our shows and audio links after the show. All kinds of goodies are yours when you like the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. And we'll all feel completely empowered when you do that. Joan in Lake Geneva is on with us next. Joan, go ahead.
Yes, Doctor, can you elaborate on two terms you used, authoritative and authoritarian, mm-hmm. and tell us what the difference is? I'm starting to think it's like a way to parent. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think this distinction was developed by a guy like him, Baumeister, a while back, where he made the distinction between authoritative versus authoritarian parent. Authoritarian parent, is a parent that basically, it's my way or the highway, it's right or wrong. They use fear, anger, aggression for influence. The child's voice is not really factored into it. It's not as much about developing the child's voice and perspective or feelings. Whereas authoritative parenting is more like, you're not going to let yourself be bullied. You're not going to let yourself be pushed around. There are limits. But you, at the same time, are interested. You are empathic to what your child's experience is. You do care about it. You are still interested in helping them develop their voice and their feelings and their perspective and why they have the thoughts and feelings they do, including when their complaints about you. It's just that you're not so overly influenced by that that you do things that you actually really don't want to do or actually bad for you to do. That's probably the simplest way to summarize that.
Joan, great question. Thanks so much. So, Doctor, you're not recommending the because I said so technique.
Well, when we're raising young children, sometimes it is because I said so. I mean, I think that the disappearance of because I said so, ultimately it is because I said so. I don't think that when you're raising younger children, I don't think every single emotion, thought, and feeling does have to be taken out and developed. It's what one author referred to as hothouse parenting, this idea that every little aspect has to be very tenderly attended to. I think there's a problem with that. I think there's a place for because I said so.
Mm. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Let's see. Let's go quickly to Susan in Alma next. Susan, good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love this topic. I think it's so needed in everyone's life. I just wanted to make the comment that my parents were born in the early 1900s with an eighth grade education. They raised six children on the farm, and things were not always easy, but we always respected them, and they always knew, going both ways, we tried to work things out. Now I'm in my 60s, my parents are gone, and I just think back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and, doesn't maturity take precedence there? Will you learn all these things as you go along?
Mm-hmm. Susan, thanks so much for your question. Doctor?
Well, I think Susan raises an important point, and that's the large cultural shift that's happened in parenting since then. My parents were also born in that time, and my brother and I often joke about the fact that if my dad was upset, all he had to do was flare his nostrils, and we knew that was it. He didn't even have to say anything. Whereas most of us have raised our children to be much more engaging of authority. In some ways, I didn't want my kids to be as cowed by authority as I was. I wanted them to actually feel much more comfortable engaging it and actually countering it where it was a problem. And I think many of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and really since then, our relationship to authority has radically changed. Again, this is kind of a class difference, but, kind of middle and upper class are much more in that vein, whereas working class parents are much more interested in maintaining that structure and that division. So I think we have kind of lost something in that, but I think the culture has shifted so much that doesn't look to me like that's changing in anytime soon.
We have about a minute left, Doctor. Is there anything that we haven't touched on yet that you wanted us to be sure to mention today?
Well, I think that one of the things that I see a lot of conflict with parents having, whether they're estranged or not, is not really realizing how much their child's life is on a very different trajectory than it is for them, if that's an adult child. I mean, once we're at the age where we have adult children, I have three of them, our children are really kind of at the center of our consciousness. We're not at the center of our children's consciousness. What's at the center of their consciousness, up until the age probably of 40 or so, for most of them, is their own relationships, their careers, raising their own children, their peer group. I mean, parents
you know, I mean, if you're lucky, you're way up there. But, I mean, I had great loving parents who I was very, very fond of. And I knew it was far more important to them when I called them than it was to me. And there was a certain amount of duty when I would call them, an obligation. But I knew whenever I called them, it was like making their day in the same way that when my kids call me, it makes my day. So I think a lot of parents end up making the mistake of guilt-tripping their kids for not calling enough, not seeing them. They get too hurt, too rejected when their kids aren't as available. And I think the more that we can kind of accept that what we want and expect may be quite different from what our children want and accept, and the more we can find some... Yeah,
please. We'll have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Doctor. We've run out of time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
Josh Coleman, among other things, he's the author of the book, When Parents Hurt. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.